Okay.
Get one of those in. Let's get into it. You guys ready to party?
Hell yes, we're ready to party. Ready to party because it's your Chapo for the week. It's me, Will Menaker, joined by Felix Biederman.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Bang Bus.
Matthew Chrisman.
Hi, folks.
Virgil, Texas.
Hey, always a pleasure.
And special guest joining us this week for a very special topical episode is our friend Tim Faust.
Howdy, y'all. How y'all doing?
Doing good. Tim and his amazing radio voice, which will put us all to shame.
Me and Matt have great radio voices. We come from the, you know, the part of the country that has the best voices, the most pleasurable ones. We have ASMR voices.
I mean, I went to high school like 30 miles from Matt, so I agree. I'd have a little loop.
What the fuck is the deal here where you get this nice, sonorous, pleasant, kind of neutral radio voice, and I just sound like a honking duck? Well, having how did that fucking happen?
I do have the most annoying laugh of anybody in this room, so I'm sure.
I like it.
You look
I sound like fucking Goofy.
Yeah. My real laugh is the Jadakiss laugh.
That's great. I get the sound at all times like I'm calling in about the Packers secondary and the
gunt. Long-time first time. Just want to talk about how, you know, if we had a real lunch pail guy like Clay Matthews, we could keep the Turk out of Vienna.
You may know Tim Faust as at Krulge on Twitter. You may know him from his series of unlicensed wrestling events, Party World Wrestling, Texas.
Or do you run a wrestling league in Texas?
You may know him from the time he went to a bar and played the song "The Boys Are Back in Town" over and over again until people broke out into fist fighting.
It's
and you
song.
May know him as helping to popularize a series of t-shirts based on the meme Ted Cruz is a Zodiac Killer. That has really met its expiration date.
To be fair, most people, when they beat memes into the ground, they raise $52,000 a month for them and their friends. But Tim rose six figures for Planned Parenthood and reproductive rights in West Texas.
It's a little group called the West Fund, which is based in El Paso, which provides transit and services for folks in Texas who need abortions but live super far from clinics.
And today, the Tim Faust that's here is healthcare wonk Tim Faust.
That's right. I'm going to get my my most Matt Iglesias possible. Let's talk about policy. Let's talk about means testing. Let's talk about CPTs and DRGs, ICD-10, ICD-9. I got it all. If there's a form, a flowchart, I'm here to talk about it. I'm really looking forward to really delving into the real wonky policy material. That's what we all love.
I'll start us off. Tim, when I first moved to New York, I interviewed to work in a part-time position at Oscar Health Insurance, but did not get it. Why?
They were frightened by I looked into your file and they were frightened by your compelling male virility.
I saw the file and it said answers were okay. Presentation probably should have buttoned the top three buttons of his shirt. Didn't make eye contact the entire time.
but if somebody wore a burqa in, that's fine. But if I wear something from my fucking culture, I don't get the fucking job. And I have to write a fake pundit to pay my rent.
Yeah.
Now I have to be in media because they didn't hire me.
So Tim, talking about our unwieldy, sprawling healthcare system, you wanted to start at the beginning, which is... Let's go to ancient Greece, Asclepius, son of Apollo.
It was called Podesta Care, where they would bring in the boys.
Before we go down that path again, I mentioned this on our last show, that you know we were going to do a show about healthcare policy, because like healthcare, it's a huge issue right now in our politics, and it's a huge issue in people's life, because the American healthcare system, as currently constituted, it seems could not be more cruel, expensive, and inefficient than if you like designed it that way. And I would contend that it is designed that way on purpose. But we wanted to get into like the actual, like you said, the weeds, into the weeds, as they say on Vox's syndicated podcast, about like what is healthcare policy and like how does it work, and how could it work better, and who are some of the people preventing us from having something better than this disaster that we already have.
Cool. Yeah. So we can start. There's a whole lot to go on that. Kind of the top line is American healthcare is like internationally humiliating. Literally, the following 20 countries by GDP have a better healthcare program than us. South Africa has a huge problem where they don't give healthcare to black citizens, and still like their overall healthcare like affordability and accessibility is better than the U.S.'s.
That is actually the Bernie plan.
Yeah.
But actually, but really specifically though, like this is something that we hear a lot when like specifically the American healthcare system is compared to other countries, right? What does it mean when you say like our healthcare system is a shambles compared to those other 20 countries? Like, and how is this graded, and like in what ways is it worse or an embarrassment on a national global scale?
So I found this this paper by this guy Luca Lorenzoni, works at the OECD, that compares costs of a given service from country to country. I think in this case, the cost he's comparing is a knee replacement, which is a good metric because knee replacements are pretty standardized, right? Like, knees don't really differ from person to person. Knees aren't culturally relative.
They're not like cranial sizes.
Exactly.
Some races do have an extra bone in their knee that makes them better at certain things, but mostly, yeah.
For the most part, if you can do a knee surgery, a knee replacement, you can do a knee replacement. It's a good standard unit. And so Luca put together a chart that compares both the relative purchasing power of a given country and the relative cost of this given knee replacement. And in the U.S., across this swath of 10 countries that he compared it to, he said that the CPI index was 1, but the knee replacement surgery was 1.63, and that a knee replacement costs 1.63x the median. Compare that to Korea, where knee replacement costs 0.57 of the median in the entire world, right? And it's not a function of American healthcare being better or hospital stays being more efficient. In fact, actually the opposite. We're spending just a shit ton of money on really basic procedures, limiting the number of folks that can get them, and screwing over the American citizen in the process.
Baller!
We fucking did it, baby. Yeah. We're number one.
Baller. It's me in the hospital just spraying interferon on everyone. My money real good right now. It's tax season. My money good right here. Come fuck with me.
Just like squeezing an IV bag. Yeah.
My money real good. My money real good, cuz.
I hope people know that reference.
I mean, you compare that to, I don't know, it's like, what's a fucking country I don't care about? Finland.
I care about Finland.
I've never been to Finland. I'll never go to Finland. They seem like nice people. There are, in general, things in Finland are more expensive than things in the U.S., but their knee replacements cost 2/3 the cost of American knee replacements.
Okay, so the ACA, that's the law of the land now. But generally, like, it's pretty new, right?
Yes.
So I want to like talk about like what was like the how did healthcare or access to healthcare is what we really mean, mm-hmm. as dictated by health insurance,
right?
How did that work prior to the ACA?
Cool. So health insurance is a relatively new invention. It came about during World War II. During World War II, usually if you wanted healthcare, like everything was very regionalized, right? You didn't travel to get healthcare. You had a local doctor, you had a local hospital chain. Things were much smaller and much cheaper. During World War II, there was a wage freeze, right? You couldn't pay people more money. There was a wage control during World War II. And so the idea of, well, let's give people supplementary benefits that aren't considered taxable income as a way to incentivize people to come work for us or increase salary, net salary or whatever, was introduced. And so the bright shining sign of this model was the idea of providing employer-sponsored health insurance, which was that everybody who worked for the same employer, group of employers, would compose one risk pool. A risk pool is that everybody pools their money in, and when someone needs healthcare, they take money out and it's paid for, and the employer negotiates rates with a hospital saying, here's how much different things cost, and that's kind of the model that has grown for the past 50 years. I think at this point, 49%, so basically half, of all non-elderly Americans have their insurance through
so
an employer.
So for the first time in World War II, I'm a factory worker at the atom bomb dispensary.
Right.
I'm building atom bombs in the Ford factory in Detroit.
Formerly a racism factory, which is converted.
It's been converted by the Manhattan Project into making atom bombs. For the first time ever, I can get something called health insurance from my employer, so I can go to any number of doctors and get my prescription cigarettes, Pall Malls, weekly instead of just going to the local doctor
right.
slash barber.
And I mean, this idea of the risk pool, exactly, we should talk about that. It's not too wonky. It's really kind of the underlying idea of how healthcare works in countries, right? Like in a pool of however many people, some folks are super sick and most folks are not sick at all, and some folks are in the middle. I think in the U.S., 10% of people represent 70% of all medical costs. And there's some strata that are obvious, like in general, people with cancer are more expensive than people without. People who are elderly.
Well, I mean, they shouldn't have it.
Right. It's God has given them cancer as a way for paying them back for a sin they committed in this or the next life.
So you're saying if we liquidate these 10%ers, then the prices will be down for everyone.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
That's one possible model. One might suggest that's kind of the direction that Paul Ryan's plan is taking us in. Fundamentally, you've got a giant pool of people, and you've got a normal cost curve, and some folks are super expensive. And they're, in fact, I mean, they're paid for by the folks who aren't very sick. You pay in now, later you get yours. People who aren't very sick don't cost very much now, so the return is minimal. Well, that's kind of the way that the idea of a risk pool works. Now, this thing is kind of like that's a general concept that's pretty universal, right? Whether it's individuals paying in or whether it's the government paying in or whatever, like that's just how people are apportioned and sickness spreads through a given community. Now, what you've got is you've got in America, you've got this particular perversion that has kind of manifested over the past 50 years, where health insurance is not like a thing you just need to have, or healthcare is not just a thing you are owed by being a person, but it is in fact a manifestation of personal responsibility. You have an obligation to buy insurance because that's how you guarantee that you'll be that, you know, you'll take care of yourself down the road. You've kind of got this idea that I'll say the same thing again. You have this idea that people have an obligation to pay in to buy this consumer good as kind of a moral virtue.
It's moral because to buy a consumer good like health insurance, both to take care of yourself down the line, mm-hmm. right? Like you're giving up a certain percentage of what would otherwise be disposable income because you know that in a future or some, you know, tragedy or accident may befall you, then you'll really need it. But isn't it also, it's moral because you're covering other people in that if you didn't have health insurance and you like went to an emergency room, other people would have to pay for
exactly.
it, correct?
You don't want to be a moocher.
A moocher, yeah,
you don't
exactly.
be a leech. And so, I mean, that's how America got its foray into health insurance. There have been national plans before. I know there was something in Germany in the 1890s. Most modern contemporary first world nations built their plans after World War II. There are still countries now that are developing universal health care. Turkey and Chile put together pretty ambitious universal coverage plans in the past couple of years, so it's still an ongoing process. But America did it first, and we've done it absolutely the worst of anybody ever to do it. So after World War II, you kind of unfroze wages, people began getting health care, and the idea of employer-sponsored health care became a stronger and stronger draw. Fundamentally, it's a way to kind of depress wages, but also like you found companies that began to specialize in providing these plans. Insurance companies have fundamentally one job, and it's to handle all the fucking paperwork between you and a hospital, of which there is an entire sub-industry. And so these insurance companies kind of began proliferating. They're all regionalized. Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is a subsidiary of Anthem, is actually like 50 companies. They're big umbrella organizations, and they're all predicated upon relationships that individual insurers have with hospitals or provider groups or whatever.
You're describing how after World War II, America developed its healthcare system in a way that was a sort of an aberration from what the rest of the developed world was doing at the same time,
right.
which was based more on this insurance-based, sort of employer-provided insurance-based. It was kind of a consumer model mm-hmm. where healthcare was a consumer good that was bought by an individual as kind of like a moral and social good.
Right.
And if you're not getting your health insurance through Medicare or Medicaid or from your employer, how often before Obamacare would someone, just a private citizen, buy their own insurance?
There was an individual market, but there was little to no regulation around it, so you could go fucking buck wild if you were an insurer and impose a bunch of arbitrary restrictions about who got to buy it or the entire idea of pre-existing conditions. There's two things I want to get through. So eventually, at some point, The history of healthcare in America is a history of creating markets that people can buy health insurance as if it's a commodity and as if people are consumers, as opposed to people with bodies and needs. So the Medicare and Medicaid was passed as a way of kind of taking the people who were most vulnerable, the poor and the elderly, out of the risk pool so that insurers could afford to pay for the healthcare of the people who were left, the employed.
These are great society programs in the Johnson administration.
For the 10 or 15 years after World War II, insurers began to notice a couple of things. People who were old cost more money to insure, right? It costs more money to pay for their hospital visits, and those bills then get passed on to people then pay the premiums after the insurance companies take their cuts, so overall costs go up. And people who are poor just go right to the ER because they don't have insurance, and that costs a bunch of money because hospitals are way more expensive than going to a primary care doctor or getting preventative care or that kind of shit.
And by federal law, hospital emergency rooms cannot turn people away for lack of ability to pay.
I think that's
which is why we don't need medical fucking universal health care, because everybody can go to the emergency room.
Boom,
done.
That's what happens, right? If someone doesn't have health care, they just go to the ER when like their foot's falling off from gangrene, and that costs fucking like ovarian cancer. Stage 0 ovarian cancer costs $12,000 to treat. Stage 5 ovarian cancer costs like fucking $250,000. And when no one has insurance or access to health care, they wait until stage 5. They go in, fucking bankrupts. Whoever's footing the bill.
That's why you should get cancer screening at the ER. Like, be a responsible adult and go to the ER for cancer.
Have you heard of a little thing called juicing? Not have the problem in the first place.
I mean, just go to the bodybuilding forums and get all your healthcare advice from there. Anyway, so these portions of the population who are most vulnerable, most in need, also the most expensive, we're kind of clogging the whole system. So 65, Social Security Acts passed, which created both Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare, they're a little bit different. They're both super good. Medicare is a federally run program which insures everybody over a certain age threshold. It has currently 44 million people enrolled in it. Everybody gets it. It's pretty fucking good. It's also the largest individual payer of insurance or healthcare costs in the entire U.S.
And costs are pretty, premiums are pretty low for Medicare.
Well, it's free. You just walk in and you get it. Sorry, premiums are what the consumer pays.
For Medicare.
Yes. You don't pay anything to get Medicare. You just get Medicare.
Really? I thought there were premiums for Medicare.
There's a thing called Medicare Advantage, which is a supplementary program for if you have like a really, really expensive treatment, you can buy additional insurance on top of it.
I see.
But in general, you just fucking walk in and you say, I'm 65. I get Medicare. You get Medicare. Pretty easy. It's the largest single payer in the U.S. It's got 44 million people. All costs in the entire U.S. are derived from Medicare prices across the board. Everything's a function of we'll pay you X percent of Medicare. We'll get into that in a second. Then you get Medicaid. Medicaid's run on a state-by-state level. The federal government provides some portion of the money. The state provides the rest, and it covers people below some percentage of the poverty line. Until the ACA, the state got to set rules on who was eligible for Medicaid. So, for example, in Texas, you had to be not able-bodied. You had to be making below the poverty line, or you had to be like pregnant. Like to qualify for Medicaid, you need to be pregnant or blind or physically disabled and poor at the same time, and then you get Medicaid.
Already the most advantaged people in society.
Right. They're allowed to tweet whatever they want, and no one yells at them.
No one ever calls them out. And they get free healthcare.
The states are able to put restrictions on that access kind of however they chose to, because ultimately states had to pay for part of the bill. And so this continues for a long time, and it kind of ferments.
Right, but like that continued for a long time, but at its advent, though, this was sort of like when liberalism was at its high point in American history, right? Yeah, this was like the high tide of American liberalism. However, in the nascent early days of the American, what is now the sort of conservative movement, both of these programs, Medicare specifically, were like horror stories to them. And I believe Ronald Reagan, one of his first big things, I think he cut an LP that was like, it was literally just like a series of lectures he gave on why Medicare was taking away freedom from America.
Right. Damn, son, where'd you find this? General Electric. They ain't the road to serfdom. Ronald Reagan classics.
The AMA presents.
DJ, run that anti-collectivism shit back.
Well. You know something? He did say well a lot.
Well. That was, I believe that was partially sponsored by the AMA, and that was Reagan the actor, not even Reagan the governor. That's a thing I really want to get into. I mean, and here's the fucking thing, right? Like, Medicare, Medicaid, incredible, great, like foundational, important parts of what we consider contemporary liberalism. Also, like, incomplete provisions, right? Like, Medicare is supposed to have a part two called Kitty Care that paid for children after they were born. The incrementalists said, we've done enough. Let's like work the process, and it never fucking went anywhere.
Right.
Once again, like, just as in a fucking foreshadowing of 2009, people who didn't want to push things too far. Ceded ground to the right wing and ultimately destroyed a project that would have saved a fucking million lives.
I mean, those two programs, like, Will referred to sort of the height of liberalism, and, you know, we see it in these programs. Liberalism at its most productive for people was when it had the specter of when communism was this massive global power, this tangible thing people could look at, and liberalism thought, well, we have to offer something to people on the left in our Western democracies so they don't become communists, but we give them something.
Right. And this, I mean, so here's the thing that I think really, if you want the story of why healthcare in America is fucked up, it's rooted in that, right?
Yeah.
In America, healthcare is a commodity. It's a thing you purchase. And the idea of liberty is tied in with this slavish devotion to letting a market set prices. Everything in the foundational liberal work to expand markets for healthcare, to remove high-risk pools, to let insurers do their work, is predicated upon the idea that there is some sort of market which people should have the option to buy insurance or the option to buy healthcare or make consumer choices, as if people ever could make informed choices about the way that, like, the healthcare that they need, which is fucking ludicrous.
And that idea of liberty, like, of market setting prices, is of course in contrast to, you know, monolithic, godless communism, and, like, you know, the parody of a centrally planned economy where, you know, there's like a central committee determining what each beat costs, or something like that, right? So why, I mean, makes sense in a certain way for consumer items that, like, you know, let's for say whiskey,
fetish videos,
you know, fetish videos or whiskey, blue jeans, Coca-Cola, things that the Soviet Union wanted in America.
Findoms.
Why is healthcare and people's health and access to a doctor so uniquely not like all other consumer goods?
So that kind of ties into how the ACA was formed, right? So let me run through this. Healthcare costs have been increasing for fucking ever, faster than inflation. They're going to, at some point, cripple a lot of our important safety net programs. And every, like, fucking 10 years, a new idea comes across of how to fix this. A new panacea, a new nostrum, whatever. In the 90s, it was the idea of managed care, in which your payer, your insurance company, or whatever, would take a more active role in finding you doctors and coordinating care, all that kind of stuff. Kaiser Permanente did that in California. Still the best in the game, but, like, that's not fucking saying much. In the 2000s, the idea of consumer-driven healthcare plans kind of came to the forefront. This is a Heritage Foundation idea we've been working on since fucking 78. It's the idea that if you give more of the costs of healthcare to the individual, in their terms, the consumer will make smarter and more informed choices and overall bring, like, they'll shop around, which never fucking happens, right? If your appendix hurts, you don't go, well, I wonder which of these doctors has the best fucking rate. You just fucking go to the doctor. Secondly, like, the individual doesn't have the ability to bring costs down by themselves. No. You're at the mercy of who's around and who can, like, fucking work on your appendix.
Like, you know, I've heard of
apps, sir.
Look,
an app could give you instant real-time data on all of the available prices at all of the potential healthcare providers. Even if you're in the middle of having a heart attack or an appendix bursting, you could just two clicks and you could see all that information.
I can relate to this because, you know, as a piss pig sub, if I need to be peed on, you know, that I just need to be peed on, okay? Like, I'm not gonna make a rational choice about whose urine is the best, you know?
Yeah, all the Vox guys love the website. Like, this is fun. I get to click through and add input my data.
Well, there's something y'all have said before that I really liked. Like, yeah, man, like, I fucking like reading policy because I'm a fucking, like, Volcel idiot and I live at home and I just fucking like clicking on things and looking at charts. But nobody else should fucking have to do that if they need to get healthcare at an ER. And there's just a whole bunch of things that go with this, right? Like, if you don't have healthcare or you don't have health insurance plan, if you can't afford to see a fucking primary care doctor, you just go to the ER when things are bad, and then everything, like, I think in the US, 53% of all of our healthcare costs overall, anybody spends, come from paying doctors and paying hospitals for, like, emergency procedures. It's this fucking giant albatross around our neck that we fucking, like, fashioned for ourselves and put on all the time. Anyway, so you've got this idea of consumer-driven health plans, and those have higher co-pays, higher premiums, higher deductibles, all fucking marketed under the guise of, well, let the consumer take care of bringing costs down, which is a way of just fucking
but
conceding.
Also, it's the idea that if they have, like, a more active role in it, like the consumer, they'll be more spendthrift. They'll make better decisions about their health and healthcare if they have to pay.
There
for
will
more.
Be apps. It'll be disruption. You'll be able to get real-time data on local prices.
Yeah, that's
and especially if you get rid of the lines. You get rid of the lines around the states.
That's the
get
idea.
Rid of the lines.
You've got this, like, and it's this fucking toxic 1-2 punch of describing insurance as a form of personal accountability, and also the citizen, the body, as a consumer, and this fucking slavish devotion, this worshipping of the idea that true liberty is the ability to set prices and let the market decide, which ultimately lets millions of people die because they can't get fucking healthcare when there's, like, a weird growth on their foot, or their lungs are exploding, or they have fucking Hep C because they got addicted to heroin and they can't, like, fucking afford to go to a clinic. And I mean that's the end result, right? And it's brutal and it's disgusting, and it's all just a very slow progression from this, for lack of a better term, it's the same neoliberal ideology that, like, shows how we handle prisons and education and international relations and fucking how we intervene in elections or cause wars for oil, whatever. It's the same idea that you must create more markets and let the players in the market, in this case the insurance companies and the healthcare providers, have free reign to let prices be set. And it's fucking stupid. And the end result is you've got right now 24 million people are uninsured, and that's of people who aren't elderly. Even people who are insured can't afford to pay for their insurance. Our outcomes are worse than any other country. We have 48,000 and 98,000 people per year die from mistreatment in the hospital. It's fucking barbaric.
I gotta say, it's been my entire adult life watching this sort of idiotic sort of conventional wisdom about healthcare has been very frustrating. But there's been a new wrinkle that happened during the debate over the botched Obamacare replacement that didn't go anywhere because somehow the master persuader, Donald Trump, taking a bag of Arby's into the Freedom Caucus and talking about his feud with Carson Daly didn't swing enough votes. Go figure. But like you saw a lot of people talking – a lot of Republicans and conservatives talking about healthcare and saying things like, well, why should – I'm a man. Why should I have to pay for someone's mammogram? And it's like – that's like the basic fundamental underlying concept behind insurance.
Right.
Is that it's a pool. And like there's this new hostility to the idea of insurance, which is saying that they don't want to replace Obamacare with some sort of, you know, jerry-rigged – less effective Obamacare. They want to replace health insurance with a system where you just go to the doctor and there's like a menu of prices and you just pick. And it's a fee for service, an individual fee for an individual service. And you don't have to worry about anybody else. And there's no pooling of anything. And there's no insuring against anything. You use health, you pay for the healthcare you use. And like that's something that because of how astronomically expensive healthcare is in this country, nobody before now really I've ever heard anyone advocating it. And I say, Like, what the fuck would that look like? That sounds to me like that could get pretty fucking wild pretty quickly.
You go into the office. The beautiful secretary, because we're going to bring women back to wearing skirts in the Freedom Caucus. She, like, buzzes you in on the iPad. You look at the iPad, and you have the first price tier. And the first price tier is a guy who does Herbalife. That's what you get if you're poor.
Yeah.
Then beyond that, you get a doctor who has a disability, maybe one eye, maybe a peg leg or something. That's what you get if you're lower middle class. And then the higher you go, you get to Jewish. That's the highest level. This is the Freedom Caucus individual payment plan healthcare.
I'm imagining someone going to the doctor's office and just going, let me get y'all do appendicitis here. Let me get one of those and some chemotherapy. So $1.2 million.
I'm trying to DM girls that I have cancer.
Matt mentioned like this hostility to the very idea of insurance, and like the common line you hear from these guys is, I don't think I need to be paying for any maternity care because I don't have a vagina. And as someone who said that, as a version of that this week was, I believe, the Washington Post's own beloved longtime conservative columnist, Charles Krauthammer.
All the conservative bloggers who are like, I'm not paying for some slut for a guy to pee in her butt or whatever they do. They're all like 500 pounds. And it's like, I'm paying for you in some manner of way just because you're like an enormously fat slob.
Right. Once their gut envelops their entire dick and balls, they begin creating this fucking like fetid concoction of their own sweat and urine that kind of seeps around the fucking ball tissue, which eventually begins to burn through the body and creates like this this gangrenous kind of cyst that burns
rotted fupa.
Yeah, like I'm not like, we're gonna pay for that.
But I'm fine with doing it.
That's the cost of being a citizen. That's how it works.
I know that's what you would call a cost driver,
right?
I love when all the right wing guys like talk about women's birth control because it just betrays how they've like just they've never even known anyone who's had sex. They don't understand that like sometimes women take birth control because for some it can like offset migraines, which are a huge problem with women. And because of what
huge problem for me when they're blah blah blah.
I call them migraines. But no, like women often have to take birth control because they'll have a problem with like migraines, which speak to a larger problem about U.S. healthcare, that there's nothing you can really do for migraines except prescribe these things that have secondary effects. Or other health things generally that birth control works for. Or just like maybe it's good to give people birth control.
Even if they're not. Exactly.
Yeah, who cares?
Why even make this concession?
But in solidarity with all women, I will start taking birth control.
As a woke ally, I call them our friends.
But when Matt Walsh or another one of these toads talk about it, they're like, why are we buying women female condoms? Make them feel better.
My answer to that is, why are we buying stealth bombers?
Yeah,
I'm paying for that. Like, I'll pay for fucking birth. I mean, like, look.
Why am I paying for the war on drugs? One of the most useless things ever.
Why am I paying for police departments to buy more fucking, like, tanks and machine guns and shit? Why don't we have an a la carte tax system where we just check off the things that we'd like to pay for? You know,
that's the libertarian dream. That's what true liberty is.
Yeah, yeah.
I never really got to the ACA. Let's
yeah, actually, okay. So we got stretches. Like in the 2000s, we were talking like this idea of sort of a more consumer based model. Then Obama came along, and then like his big signature achievement was the ACA,
right.
Also known as Obamacare.
Right, and the ACA was, as everyone knows at this point, initially like a fucking Heritage Foundation paper that kind of wriggled its way up like a fucking larva through the topsoil and kind of came to play as like what the acceptable level of discourse was after Clinton's healthcare failures in the 90s. And during the 08 primaries, you had all three competitors, Obama, Clinton, and Kucinich, making a guest appearance, talking about how to handle the idea of healthcare. And it was fucking credit, Kucinich had it Sorry, not Kucinich. Howard Dean. Nope, sorry, Kucinich. Kucinich had it right the entire fucking time. He was able to shot call all of the problems with consumer-driven healthcare plans and where they would break and where they could go wrong, but he did it in a really funny voice, and he looks like a fucking idiot, so that doesn't go very far. So Clinton had, Neera Tanden wrote for Clinton, her version of the ACA when Obama stomped her. People kind of jumped ship. Tanden came over. Rahm Emanuel came over. Zeke Emanuel, his brother, slunk into the faction. Larry Summers, fan favorite Larry Summers, made a guest appearance as one of the policy directors in writing the ACA. So it's like a fucking Spider-Man rogues gallery of a bunch of neoliberals getting together to try to solve problems.
Before they came on, I remember that the big point of contention between Clinton and Obama was that Obama said that Clinton's plan would have a tax penalty for not getting insurance.
The mandate.
His plan wouldn't. And then Clinton, and all those people came on. And
Clinton wanted to... So
basically what they're trying to do is solve the problem of rising health costs and then people who are uninsured.
Right.
Right.
And they want to do that by creating more markets for insurers to operate in, right? It goes back to this fucking congenital idea that these
venereal idea, these oatmeal-faced
dipshits have, that the best way to increase access to healthcare is through creating more liberalized markets through which people can operate as consumers, which is fucking stupid. So the ACA, it's important to be really, really clear about a couple things. Like the ACA, like the best parts of the ACA are where it acted against that tendency, that kind of neoliberal healthcare tendency. And parts of that are extremely good. There's this, Sherry Gleed was one of the HHS directors who passed through the idea of essential health benefits. Every insurance plan has to cover a bunch of shit and can't not cover it. If you have an emergency out of your fucking region, your insurance company must pay for the ER bills even if you're out of network. The idea that preventative care should be affordable, must be included, must be treated, all these things that kind of, like, before that you could put together anything you wanted, call it an insurance plan, sell it for $14 and have a deductible of $10,000 with no treatment outside of like one or two hospitals. And people got reamed all the time, right? Like, simply having insurance didn't mean you had good insurance. You just like legally had a piece of paper that has the word insurance written on it and like a fucking smiley face. It isn't worth the fucking paper it's printed on. So people went into massive, I think it's like 60% of all debt in the U.S. was medical debt. People were going underwater because they couldn't afford, and their insurance wasn't covering the health care that they needed to stay alive. Just like a bunch of fucking rampant extortion, grift. And also bundled with the ACA was Medicaid expansion. Up until 2012, states could set the limits of how people got Medicaid. And there's fucking leaps and hurdles, and it's all bullshit. The ACA posited the idea, you need to expand Medicaid to everybody in your state who's under some percentage of the poverty line. I think it's 138%. The federal government will pay for that. Will pay for that gap for the first 6 or 8 years to kind of wean you onto it. It's free money. It's a free house.
It's free real estate.
It's free real estate. and then there was a lawsuit, and some governors chose not to abide by it. But it was a really strong regulation. Like, the ACA was fundamentally a way of regulating pretty effectively the insurance companies and regulating less effectively the providers who set costs. And in the process, creating a brand new market of the individual uninsured.
I'm sorry, when you say the providers who set costs, are you referring to doctors and hospitals?
Hospital groups and the AMA. Well, I have a lot of spit for, which I'll save for a little bit from now. But yeah, people who ultimately set costs, hospitals. And pharma and other people like that. And there's some other shit in there too, like the idea of using electronic health records, which is cool. Claims databases, which are good. So you can build data sets to look at things later. Like, they did a lot of really good things. And those are all things that act contra the belief. Oh, also removed a big one, excluding people from insurance for having pre-existing conditions, which was huge. It used to be that if you didn't have employer-sponsored health insurance, you had to buy an individual plan, but they could cut you for anything they wanted. So if you're a 63-year-old woman and you have, I don't know, some version of cancer, emphysema or whatever, you're not even eligible to get insurance. So you go work as a Walmart greeter and get... I guess not Walmart, because they don't provide. You work at like as like a fucking TSA bag handler, working like a backbreaking menial manual labor job, in order to get insurance. And there's like fucking stories of this up and down the board. It's brutal. It's inhumane. It is not a thing you would ever design to take care of people with. It's a way you punish people for being sick or having body. It's just, It's fucking like, if you are not useful to us as a person, you can pay money into insurance and not receive care back. If you do not qualify as one of those, then we'll just fucking throw you to the side. It's barbaric. And the ACA, what it acted against these tendencies of creating a market or worshiping the idea of consumerism as the way health is managed, did a lot of good. But where it failed is where it embraced these tendencies or failed to push back against them enough, or where the fucking like milquetoast incrementalists decided not to make a fight. And of course, I'm talking about people like Larry Summers. I'm talking about people like Joe Lieberman. I'm talking about people that decided not to use the advantage that Obama had at the time to whip his party together and force him to push things through. Like,
but also, they thought they had to reward the insurance companies with these markets because they saw how Hillary Care failed. Well, and they didn't want to get Harry and Louise'd.
Right, a big part of liberalizing the individual market was a massive kickback to the insurance companies called risk corridors. Risk corridors are the idea that in this population of uninsured people, we have no idea how sick they are. People, when they don't have insurance, like you saw this thing actually after the ACA in West Virginia, when people got insurance for the first time, they all began using it a lot because they all had been sick the entire time but not doing anything. They're fucking Puritan about it. And so insurers kind of balked at this idea that if we give people insurance, they'll use it and we won't have any money left. How are we gonna manage that? So the idea of the Federal Risk Corridor Program was invented, which basically offers financial security through massive subsidization of these markets to insurers. That's how you got them in line. That was the trade-off for regulating them, was promise of just a fuck ton of money down the road. Ironically, the Republicans later gutted that appropriation, and now insurance companies are suing the federal government to get the money back, but that was the idea of how these things would be managed. And so then that kind of takes you to the AHCA. Like, where the ACA was successful, it fought against the idea of neoliberal healthcare. Where it was unsuccessful, the AHCA really took root.
And this goes back to this goes back to Ronald Reagan's fire ass mixtape against Medicare. This is something that the right wing and conservatives in this country have long tilted against, because I think they understand correctly, once something like Medicare becomes established, it will be popular and people will expect it. And once that expectation is there, that cuts against their entire vision of society and government. So they're constantly fighting this battle against the idea that the government can provide goods or needs or be a force of good in people's life. And that they're constantly fighting against the idea that people should expect things like healthcare, right? And so like Medicare, Obamacare was the huge thing that they weren't tilting against. And then, lo and behold, Hillary loses the election. Trump gets in. It's at the top of their agenda. He said it. He now denies it, of course. But, like, repeal and replace Obamacare was a huge rallying cry during the campaign. This is, like, one of the top things they wanted to do. I think we understand why they wanted to do it. What the AHCA, this now failed effort to repeal and replace it, what would that have looked like?
It rolls back all the components of the ACA that did good things.
What you just described.
Subsidies.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Trump said everyone was going to be covered. It was going to be amazing.
So everyone.
Yeah, Tim, you're wrong. He said that.
Everyone can be covered if you offered terrible insurance to a small subsection the way they would accomplish that was by creating like fucking nothing plans that cost nothing because you got nothing in return.
So it'd be like the McDonald's care.
Yeah.
You know, it'd just be like you pay $25 a month and you can get a Band-Aid in the mail.
Right.
On a bi-monthly basis.
And you get a free shake on your birthday.
Yeah.
that kind of shit. I mean, like the A8, like if you read Ryan Care's proposals for the past 3 years, which I have because I'm fucking stupid, like they don't even like they're inherently puff pieces that he wrote for like to make a point, but there is no internal consistency, right? It's purely barbaric. Now, Paul Ryan is a fucking idiot. He's a fourth generation Wisconsin fail son. In Wisconsin, the great grandparents work in the
factory. He's a disgrace to our kind.
Right. Well,
talking about fail sons, not Wisconsinites.
Fourth generation, great great grandparents come in as immigrants. Grandparents work in the factories. Parents take white collar jobs adjacent to the factories of the factory towns in the suburbs. Doctor, lawyer, used car dealership owner, whatever. And the fourth generation fucking can't find out where their own dick is and fucks up for the rest of us. That's Ron Johnson. That's Paul Ryan. That's Scott Walker. All these fucking like weird dog.
They all
kind of
look alike.
They're melting. They're the Nazis from Indiana Jones.
Paul Ryan is the guy that is routinely discussed as like being the wonk. What policy
guy? You know who helped start that legend? Friend of the show, Ezra Klein.
Yes. Another healthcare wonk.
I mean, Paul Ryan just said, I'm a wonk, and people believed him. It was really, these people are that gullible.
But that's the thing. Like, he's not a wonk. He's just a guy who's ideologically committed to rolling back the Great Society and the New Deal in American politics.
Right. With
society.
Paul Ryan, I wonder a lot, right? This is a thing that's just fun to think about when you're sad. Like, is Paul Ryan actively trying to kill poor people? Or is he just an idiot who believes that he can espouse Ayn Rand ideology, make it manifest, make the world a better
place? Calling it right now, number one.
I have to believe it's the former, because Ryan Care was so overtly bad. A big component of Ryan Care is an extension of this consumer driven idea, the idea of high deductible health plans and HSAs. HSAs are bullshit. Don't even fucking bother explaining them. They're bullshit. They're another place to put your money that you don't understand, that you can't use. Fuck it. Terrible. High deductible health plans. You end up paying more money for health care because you have a high deductible. Fucking everybody, even the fucking bad providers, agree these are bad things, because no one can afford to pay for healthcare. Everybody was unilaterally opposed. There's nobody in the entire fucking healthcare like sphere who thought this was at all a good idea on any side of the debate. The only guys that think it's a good idea are fucking people that sit in piles of gold and like look at their dicks all day long and talk about how nice it would be if everybody was white, and then they like take that back, delete that tweet, and say if everybody could be self-accountable and responsible and be responsible consumer citizens, fuck them. And that's what the AHC is predicated upon. And like, here's the thing: it's never going to pass. People, healthcare entitlements are sticky. People love having them. People hate getting them taken away.
But it didn't fail this first time because of that. It failed because it was not barbaric enough. Like, so what the fuck did the Freedom Caucus want it to have? Did they want to have a thing where, like, you could just go shoot random homeless people and then make that legal? Like, was that? Like, what the fuck did they want to have in it that wasn't in it? Because, as you said, it was a savage taking away of right of people's health care. What the fuck did they want that wasn't in it? So what do Gersh Cuntwell and those guys want? What is their ideal replacement of Obamacare?
No one knows, right? They're all like fucking Dr. Claw. The reason I believe these things won't pass is because the governors and state reps will rebel, right? Like, everybody who says maybe we should roll back Medicaid gets fucking screamed at for hours and hours by old people, and then they get lonely and they feel
and
sad
they vote.
And they cry about it. Governors don't want to eliminate Medicaid in their state because they'll never fucking get elected again. Ryan Care includes provisions for restructuring Medicaid. There's a thing called block grants. There's a thing called per capita caps. They're both equally heinous. Fundamentally, they create ways to reduce the amount of funding for Medicaid in a given state and prevent folks from getting care. They just have two different bureaucratic structures for getting it done. But you're gonna people push back when their election is on the line. And, you know, I don't want, like, I'm going to say this thing because I need it to be true. I think the AHCA will be like a werewolf that shows up every fucking full moon. We got to deal with it. But I think it'll just fall down and drool over itself a couple of times throughout the administration.
So, Tim, what is going to happen to the ACA if there are no legislative changes to it? We've been talking about a death spiral
in individual
markets.
The death spiral is this idea that people can't afford premiums. So it's important to note this is just people that don't have employer insurance, right? This is just the individual market. People can't afford the premiums for their own coverage, and also they're sicker than they expect, than insurers expect. So overall costs go up, driving premiums up, so more folks drop out. The people that are left, people that are the most sick. Because if you have fucking stage 4 cancer, you're not dropping your insurance. You'll pay the $2,000 a month. Like, fuck it, man. You need that shit. So all of a sudden, you have a risk pool that's just the infirm and the elderly and the sick. And they cost $1 trillion to treat, and you can't build a market off of that. That's what the death spiral is. And like, fundamentally, like, that's not false. It's also partially overblown. But the it kind of goes to serve the broader point that, like, neoliberal policies, consumer-driven healthcare policies, cannot solve the problems caused by the idea of healthcare as a consumer good. Like, fucking, like, Larry Summers. Fucking very friendly, very warm, very personally nice, dipshit Larry Summers. Well, can't solve the problems of commoditization of healthcare. He's like a fucking, like, it's Sam Walton wearing a smiley face sticker. It's a killer robot trying to grow a flower. It's a gun shedding a tear. Like, these things that cause the problems can't solve the problems that they themselves cause.
Okay, so we've now just sort of narrated a sort of a brief history of American healthcare, the American healthcare system, and why it's so fucked up. So let's now begin, like, laying out some of, like, these other options that are not like utopian, not complete fantasies. What are some ideas that are, like, just sitting on the shelf right now?
Right.
That, like, we could have a different way. What are some different options for managing the healthcare system of a country as big as America?
So if you want to get to parity with other countries, the idea of the thing we want to get to is a federal single-payer option, a.k.a. Medicare for all. And fundamentally, like, we have the tools to deploy that in place. If someone were to, like, there's a lot of legal frameworks that prevent us from saying, you got Medicare for all tomorrow. The ERISA Act, McCarran-Ferguson, other kind of shit like that. But whatever, you can work through that. It's, like, for the fucking nerds to figure out. But fundamentally, we have the tools in place. We have the policies, the structures, the processes in place to expand Medicare unilaterally. What we can't fix is cost like that. And cost is a major, major, major driver of all the problems in American healthcare. Shit is extremely expensive for extremely stupid and invented reasons. So any universal healthcare approach needs to address both the coverage question and the cost question, and luckily both are addressable if you have the political capital and the will to do it.
So, okay, like, the political capital and will, what is standing in the way of both of those things?
What or who?
Yeah.
Well, you've got this kind of host of bad guys. I can just run through.
Yeah, run through the bad guy list.
Yeah, let's hear the bad guys.
The Tim Faust duck hunt.
Ninja style, one at a time.
So, when people are mad about healthcare, the organizations they're usually the most mad at are insurance companies, which I understand, because usually they're the ones saying your bills aren't being covered. But post-ACA, they're fairly rational actors. They're just rational actors in a broken machine that turns people into blood.
right, like, plasma.
Right. Sure. I mean, like, insurance companies are following all the rules. Like, it's not nearly as exploitative as it was a couple of years ago. It's just that the rules are stupid and the goals are dumb. So, like, insurance companies should be ground into the dirt, but they're not the guys who are currently causing a bunch of the problems that we're running into. Yeah, they got fucking lobbyists, but they can be cowed. They were cowed before, they'll be cowed again. Mm-hmm. Fuck them. I don't care. A really interesting group that, like, and people know about pharma. People know that pharma is bad, drug costs are expensive. Martin Shkreli has served his only useful function in life by being a good, like, model citizen for how bad pharma can be. Great, we understand that pharma is 10% of healthcare costs in America. So important, not like the most urgent thing. What's really worth talking about is the AMA and the idea of prices and where prices come from. The AMA is the American Medical Association. They would claim they're a professional association or like a union, but if they're a union, they're a union in the way that cops are unions. Like a couple percent of all different provider groups are part of the AMA. The AMA has this weird and privileged role in American healthcare, in which they basically get to set the cost structure by which their members are then paid, which in any other scenario would be extremely fucked up.
Is this a voluntary organization?
Yes. So the AMA has...
It's more of a cartel then.
It's a cartel. Let me give you an example of kind of how the AMA works. We can, like, there's this entire idea of DRGs, diagnosis groups, and CPTs, which are billing codes, and ICD-10, whatever, but we can skip over that. That's for fucking nerds. The AMA, so every year, let me step back. The AMA, every year, HHS and CMS set kind of the billing rates for Medicare. Medicare, being the single largest payer in the entire U.S., says, okay, like, we're going to charge or we're going to pay $20,000 for procedure A in this given state or to this given hospital. And then every insurer says, okay, well, we'll pay you 1.2x of Medicare, or more often 2.4x of Medicare. Like, all costs are set as a function of Medicare,
right?
Because they're the largest organization. They have the most negotiating power. Everybody kind of leeches off them like little fucking fish that eat the lime off the side of your aquarium tank. So the Medicare is the guy that's setting all the rules. But, like, healthcare is big. Like, the argument is that, like, making this price schedule for how much procedure A through Z cost is big and complicated. Let's let the experts advise us on this. So there's this big thing called the Rules Update Committee, which is just a bunch of fucking doctors that have gone through, like, several layers of meetings. They feel like all their problems have been abstracted. And they advise CMS, like, the fucking three C-level bureaucrats that show up, as in, like, ABC, not, like CRO or whatever, C-level bureaucrats that show up and tell them how they think this, like, healthcare pricing structure should be updated. And here's how that shakes down. They have an obligation to keep the thing theoretically value neutral. In theory, you can't just make things more expensive. You need to have things balance out. Here's how that works. Let's say this year the AMA decides, they look at knee surgeries, and let's say there's only one kind of knee surgery. And they say, hey, you know what? Knee surgeries can be pretty complicated, or they can be pretty simple. Let's say that there's a hard kind of, in like this billing code for knee surgery, let's split that into two and say there's two kinds. The hard kind of knee surgery, which costs 2x of what knee surgery used to cost, and the easy kind, which costs 0.5x of what knee surgery used to cost. And because these two things will happen in equal proportion, the costs are the same, and they've got two billing codes, everything's great. They pass that as a recommendation to CMS. CMS and HHS accept that. Bam, it's not on the Medicare schedule. And then what happens immediately is everybody who performs a knee surgery picks the more complicated code just across the board. Mm-hmm. And costs skyrocket because you've got, when given, like, doctors are now incentivized to also advise on how they get paid, which kind of gets in the way of them providing, like, care. Doctors don't like doing this, at least the ones that I've talked to. But they have pressure from their organizations, or even more accurately, hospitals have giant departments whose only function is to find the most expensive billing code they can possibly select, pick that one, and then find a way to justify it. It's this entire sub-industry. Here's a thing that fucking healthcare has liberalized, a new market we've created. We've created this entire industry of blood-sucking, useless jobs that find ways to bill insurers or Medicare for cost treatments. And these, I mean, like, this entire structure, everybody's a rational actor in a structure that's fundamentally stupid and pushes
because of federal
up.
Law.
Pardon?
Because of federal law, because of the way federal legislation.
Yeah, and because of the way that this panel of experts have ingratiated themselves into the people that get
so the AMA is a very reactionary organization, also, in its outlook.
The AMA, here's the first thing the AMA ever did, right? 1860, right after the Civil War, the AMA is a very loose coalition at that point in time. The first thing they did as a group, the gang all got together and said, okay, we're going to set price floors on how much medical service costs.
On amputations,
right. Leaching, getting like that sort of thing.
Lead,
cocaine tonics.
Lead bullets.
Getting grape
out
shot out of
right,
the human
exactly,
body.
Right, exactly, grape shot. They set price floors.
Stuffing bullion cubes up James Garfield's ass.
Right.
I think everyone, all the doctors back then, like, because there is no Tumblr or DeviantArt, because you didn't have those things, you just had to become a doctor and be like, yeah, you have to put a live eel up someone's asshole and then, you know, put some string in their urethra.
That's because they never had access to pictures from the Orient.
Yeah, so they would have to just do, like, genital torture and ass play with old men and then remember it and maybe get a daguerreotype of it.
The AMA was the first Styles project back in 1860. Yeah.
So what did they do after the Civil War?
Oh, they set price floors.
Okay.
So, like, healthcare costs are regionalized, right? Like, a surgery in New York and a surgery in Alabama cost differently, whatever. And in a usual market, you would see those costs fluctuate, right? Yep. Nope. Thanks to the AMA in fucking 1860. Now, like, there's a standard menu of prices which you couldn't go below or you kicked out. Like, it's rotten. They've been rotten since birth.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If we were to, you know, in the Chapo dictatorship, you know, in the utopian future that we're all working towards, in which we are supreme ruler, we put you, Tim Faust, in charge of healthcare for America 2 Zone 4, which is the region formerly known as the Northeastern United States, pre-fallout. No, just generally though, like if you were put in charge of like healthcare policy for America and like things like realistic or political will, et cetera, these things were not a consideration. If you just had 100% authority to craft a sane and rational healthcare system for the United States,
how do we get
America,
socialized medicine? Christ.
Yes. Okay.
Well, the first thing I would do is make circumcision illegal.
Thank you.
Obviously.
Thank you.
The second thing I would do is make weed mandatory, and then I would retire.
Well, then
no.
We wouldn't have any problems because it cures all diseases.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. Do you know that Jesus Christ, Martin Luther King, the framers of the Constitution, Rodney King,
were all circumcised.
They were all circumcised, and they all smoked weed, which is why the government killed all of them.
So here is I have a 5-step process that I think is relatively feasible within the construct for how you arrive at single payer healthcare, which is different than socialized medicine. Socialized medicine is the state owns the providers as well, like NHS, which is cool, but I think is a bit too. That's a lot of
baby
lot
steps.
Of friction there. But
that's a lot of bollocks, mate. I won't be able to go out to Tesco and pay nothing and get me heart taken care of and me bloody falling arches and all that, mate. I want a bloody NHS for America, mate.
Here's a 5-step process, right?
The Faust. The 5-step plan.
The Faust, the 2 F's, Faust 5-step. First up is, you know, Medicaid expansion in all the states. A bunch of states didn't expand Medicaid after the ACA, which is it was purely political. It's despicable. It affects only people who are poor, people who are of color, and women. It's strictly punitive. It's aberrant. It's one of the biggest cost drivers we have is people who aren't able to get Medicaid going to ERs when it's way too late in the game. I hate to say it, it was a Medicaid expansion didn't happen because governors were didn't want to support Obama, which is rooted in all that fucking like bizarre racist bullshit that came in with the 08 election. Whatever. Expand Medicaid. Also say expand Medicare. Friend of the show, Matt Brunig, proposed an idea that I think is really, really smart of pushing to expand Medicare to people under age 26. Now, the reason for that, there's twofold. One, people under 26 are, by and large, extremely cheap to insure, right? Medicare is basically an insurer, and that risk pool is extremely accessible and very cheap. It also begins to unhook employment from insurance. Employer-driven insurance costs way, way more than Medicare. It costs like fucking 2.4x, super expensive, and people get jobs often so they can get insurance for their kids. If you put these kids on Medicare, you can begin to deassociate these things and find ways to push people into a later public option. Step one, expand Medicaid and Medicare. Step two is you find a way to kind of reduce the stranglehold of the AMA. You move away from the idea of fee-for-service into the idea of bundled billing. That's how it works in every other country. You don't go to the hospital just doesn't give you a list of here's the fucking 40 ways we looked at your dick and like here's some Band-Aid costs. Yeah. You say we will pay you to take care of appendicitis. That is it. Like the billing code is appendicitis. Maybe like there's some mitigating factors.
This is how every other country does it.
That's how it
the
works.
The billing code is PEN 15.
Yes,
all medical procedures.
The PEN 15 club. You move towards that as a way of kind of reducing all these fucking irregularities that AMA works into the billing process, mm-hmm. and standardizing. Really, if the federal government would tomorrow set prices for all procedures in the U.S. and say that's how much these things cost, half of our problems would go away. Third step, you open up the avenues through which the federal and state governments can really kind of experiment in making healthcare better. Medicaid, when it works well, does some pretty fucking amazing things. Here's an anecdote. Maryland, Appalachian Maryland, the far west, small population, huge health costs. Bunch of folks that have heroin problems, that picked up hep C, that pick up emphysema, pick up all kinds of diseases that come from living in Appalachia where there's no fucking doctors and living in a like super depressed economy. They are primarily Medicaid in Maryland, and they cost a fuck ton. So the Maryland chief of health and hygiene, I believe her name is Shannon McMahon, not of the McMahon family, unfortunately, strong-armed the one hospital group into doing this. So There's no preventative care in Appalachia. There's no primary care physicians. If you want to be a doctor, it's way more lucrative to be a specialist, like a fucking surgeon, anesthesiologist, whatever, than it is to be a primary care doctor. So no one chooses to go into this thing. Actually, we import a lot of people on H-1B visas to be our primary care doctors for rural parts of the country. No preventative care clinics. Preventative care is extremely low margin and very high volume. If I made a preventative care clinic tomorrow, I'd go bankrupt in a year. The thing that is really lucrative is high margin, low...
Butt implants.
High margin, low number, which is mostly inpatient hospital stuff. But none of these fucking services existed in Maryland because for some reason, the market did not provide. So Maryland Medicaid said, listen up, hospital, here's the fucking deal. We'll pay you a flat $100 million per year. That's it. You can't deny anyone treatment and you can't, like, you have to provide these services. Like, you have to... Here's the things you got to cover. You got to cover it to anyone who comes through your door. Those are the rules. Go ahead and make your own profit. And what do you know? Once they had some inducement from the state government, this hospital began building their own preventative care clinics. They began training primary care doctors and putting them in the community. They began doing all the things you would need to happen if healthcare were in fact a commodity. Wow. To make healthcare costs more affordable. And the next year, they reaped a $20 million profit because really? They brought down the overall cost. Yeah, like Medicaid can do things like that. And then the reason Medicaid is cool is like... They're little laboratories, right? And when one thing works well in one place, it kind of percolates across the country. Washington State also has a massive heroin problem. And heroin goes hand in hand with Hep C. A couple of years ago, a new Hep C drug came out that makes you not want to kill yourself, which is a market improvement upon the old Hep C drug. only problem with it is that it costs $80,000 per person for a course of treatment. Now, that's, of course, the Medicaid, Medicare price, because they're not allowed to negotiate drug prices. For Veterans Affairs, Department of State, Public Health Service, and the Coast Guard, for some reason, that drug costs $16,000. So you need to let Medicaid and Medicare negotiate drug prices. That's just purely litigative. There's no reason why they can't negotiate drug prices. That's just some fucking...
Republicans hate that.
It's a lobbyist. It's a pharma lobby put that through and won't let them negotiate prices. But because Medicaid's on a fixed budget per year, it can't afford... Actually, my girlfriend worked on this lawsuit. She's a healthcare lawyer. And they sued the state of Washington, saying you can't deny these people the drug that makes them not die for Hep C. Like, that's part of the ACA. You can't provide discriminatory services to people based upon pre-existing conditions. You must give them the Hep C drug that they need, even though it costs $80,000. So now Washington's in a bind, right? Because they can't afford to give people these drugs, but also they're legally required to.
Oh, Ron Fournier solution. Everyone with Hep C joins the Coast Guard.
They adopted the Maryland approach, right? They began pushing provider and hospital groups to provide more preventative care. Hep C is a thing you can catch early. You can do things like needle exchanges, syringe exchanges. You can get folks to engage in behavior that's less risky and reduce the amount of Hep C overall. So they adopted the same model that McMahon put forward in Maryland. And they're doing it in Washington State.
So you heard it here first. So the socialist approach, states' rights.
It is the only time states' rights is not like a fucking like racist catchphrase. And the way that that works is like a strong federal government says, here are the things you must do. You must provide health care for all these people. Here are the things you must cover. Here's the extent of it. Now go and make manifest the way you make that real. Which makes sense because like the fucking... Yankees don't know how like fucking Texas works, and like the New York model, New York City model for healthcare works isn't going to work in like rural Alabama. Like there is reasonable room to let states experiment with how to deliver healthcare to the people.
But the problem is, like, left to their own devices, a lot of these Republican governors, their experiments with healthcare would be like Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome.
Right. That's why
you would have two sick people fight each other to the death and then cure the one who walks out.
Right, and then costs are halved. Yeah. That's why you got to have the really strong federal
government goes in, right.
So that's my step three. Like, let these states experiment. Set these extremely strong rules for what they must cover. Let Medicaid experiment with these things. Also, negotiate drug prices. But expand Medicaid waiver programs. Let states try this stuff. And then here's where things start to get spicy. You build a national public option using existing insurance models, but Medicare pricing. So one of the reasons the public option, which is the idea of like a government-run insurance company, wasn't passed during the ACA was the idea that it would be too good and everyone would want it, and then insurance companies would go bankrupt, which actually
What's
fucking rules. That's yeah. great. Yeah. Medicare right now is 44 million people. You build an insurance company that uses Medicare pricing because it is the government and can negotiate those rates and has like a strong structured billing process. It'll fucking overnight, like within a couple of years, become the largest insurer in the entire U.S. Not quite single payer, but pretty close, right? Then between Medicare, Medicaid, and this public option, you have the majority, and because you've worked to disentangle employment from insurance, you've found a way to get a bunch of folks in government-controlled healthcare plans. Brings us to step five, just fucking nationalize the health insurance industry. 2008, you could have done it for about $1.1 trillion. Presumably, if you build a public option that can drive down their worth, you can buy them out. Like, fucking buy out Aetna. Like, these people, these companies are fucking vampires that have a bunch of David Graeber term bullshit work that they generate, but, like, there is a need for that to some degree. Like, that is a value, figuring out how to deliver billing or negotiate with hospitals. But fuck it. It's not like a fucking thing that should be profitable. It's just a service. Nationalize the insurance industry, buy them out, buy out the infrastructure, then you got single payer.
Medicare for All is broadly popular, according to opinion polling. Yeah. So, in closing, how do we sell this to people? One thing that you touched on at the beginning of our conversation is the problem with these market-based approaches and treating healthcare as a commodity. And again, as friend of the show Matt Brunick says, that it's wrong to frame it as a commodity. It should be framed as, what would you say?
Entitlement, right? It's a civil right. I wouldn't say human right. I'd say civil right, which
is
a distinction.
I'll say human right, but okay.
Maybe that's being a bit pedantic. But like any, at a sufficiently advanced country has an obligation to take care of its citizenry. One, it's the fucking moral thing to do. Two, it's the economic thing to do. And fuck using economics to make a moral argument, but like it's really open and shut, nakedly obvious in this case. If you can get folks to get screened for cancer and catch it at stage zero, then pay for it then, like, you will drive down costs for the entire population down the road. It's fucking obvious. It's also moral and humane. It's the obvious correct thing to do. And people recognize this, right? In my opinion, I worked on ACA enrollment. I ran a bunch of canvases in Florida in 2013, and so I got involved in healthcare. But I wasn't, even though I reported to fucking HHS, I wasn't employed by the government. The government ran away from advocating the thing they'd built. They outsourced it. The fucking pharma lobbyist firm for the Shkreli's of the world united saw the chance to have this big fucking new market that they could juice. And so they spent a bunch of money paying people like Planned Parenthood to get out the vote, but enrollment campaigns. For which I worked for the first open enrollment period. And that's like, I get it. That's a fine public-private partnership, but there was never any public part of it. Obama never got it. Like, if you tell people what you are giving them and you fucking hammer it home, people will then want the thing. You guys have talked about this before. I think Christman talked about this in depth, and it's fucking obvious. This is not a complicated topic. But Obama fled from Obamacare. Obama fled from the idea of telling people what they deserve as citizenry.
Well, I guess that's the lesson of 2010 when they suffered these historic losses in Congress and thought, oh, well, that was Obamacare, so we're going to pretend it never happened.
They're just fucking dipshits. And then you see the AHCA finally forced somebody, although not the Dems, to explain to folks what the ACA was and what they were going to lose.
You're right. It was the fucking Republicans who were doing it.
They outsourced their job in 2012 to fucking Paul Ryan in 2017, and then they got their fucking asses whipped. Sarah Cliff, the only Vox writer that I like, although I don't know Jeffrey Stein, Sarah Cliff is one of the two best healthcare writers in the U.S., next to Timothy Jost, who I fucking adore. Microphone bought me a book.
You adore him because his name sounds like yours?
Yes. Okay. He also he wrote the first big healthcare law textbook that people still use. He's a conscientious Christian, but he supports birth control and abortion, which is mandatory. Mandatory support, not mandatory abortion. That's step six of Tim Pell's plan.
Step six, mandatory.
he's been writing about this shit for decades. Very good angry writer. Anyway, Sarah Cliff ran a focus group in, I believe, West Virginia just a couple of days ago. And they were going to talk about healthcare. And then unprompted, one of the Trump voters there was like, you know what we should have? Canadian healthcare. Just fucking off the bat. Because it made sense. Because someone told him what healthcare is about and what he's entitled to as a citizen. And he went, oh yeah, of course. That's how it works. No one has done this before. People are cowards. Like the neoliberal establishment movement that advocates for healthcare as a commodity can never destroy the idea of healthcare as a commodity, which is the thing that people don't want. People don't want.
People know it intuitively, and they know people who do have good healthcare.
What I really wonder about, you know, and this is the most fringe position, people who everything now they're like, this is great. Just keep this forever. The like 30, probably 20% of people in that poll who are like, yeah, no, I should have to personally pay out of pocket for non-tax deductible health insurance.
These health saving accounts are great.
Yeah, they're like the Jeb voters. They're the I want to know what their lives are like.
You mean I get 0.5% interest on my health savings account returned to me as a refundable tax credit?
Man,
I just like talking to Blue Cross Blue Shield. I think they're polite, charming. Wait, no, that's it. All the people who want to keep the current system are perverts, and they want to fuck the customer service people on the line at HMO.
No, they're outsourcing that to robots. That's a fucking short-term plan.
Well, see, that's how we're going to get single payer. Once we get rid of that contingent.
But people want this thing. People know they want this thing when they are told what this thing is. It is not a very hard sell. You need to regulate prices. You need to regulate insurers. Like, every country that has tried this thing has included that exact same... Like, I think a couple of years ago, the Netherlands tried to see what would happen if they deregulated prices and let the private market take care of it. And it fucking bombed within a year, and they canceled that plan. Like, it's... Everybody knows how to do this thing. Americans are too wrapped up in the idea of, like, liberty as the market, and it's fucking
my
bullshit.
Idea to sell it is to pay everyone to go on a vacation to France and then break their arm while they're there.
Yeah.
Have them go to a French hospital, get it set, give them wonderful drugs, and then a bill for like $60.
But the bill does have a terrible cartoon. Yeah,
the bill will have a racist cartoon on it.
You,
it doesn't have to be France, Felix.
You owe 50 blackface. You can either pay your bill or draw Muhammad.
Wait,
I'm Dr. Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah. Jesus.
You knew what you were doing like when you used France.
I like this plan.
There's also the question of, like, can states force single payer individually, state by state? And while here's a complicated thing. It's extremely volatile. It's set up to fail.
Sorry, you're referring to, like, there is a bill now in the New York State Assembly single-payer plan for New York State.
Like there is in Oregon.
And that's a Medicaid waiver and a Medicare waiver and a bunch of other shit, plus, like, an income tax fund.
Couldn't the Trump administration reject the waiver?
Yes.
Just to be an asshole?
That's complicated. Yep, Seema Verma, who's, like, a fucking super villainous, could say no to it, but whatever. Here's the problem with state-by-state healthcare for all, is that healthcare is counter-cyclical. And that is, like, when the economy is at its worst, people need healthcare the most. If you're funding healthcare through income tax, 49 states have some degree of balanced budget amendments or provisions or whatever. They can't deficit spend. So when your economy on the state, even like a prosperous state like New York, is in the shitter, you literally don't have the money to pay for the healthcare program you've built. And you don't, like, have, like, a fucking, like, F-32 project to pull money from. You got to pull it from something else. So you set this thing up to fail. You're having to pull from programs to pay for it. And my fear is that one state by state public option program that fails will kind of damn the progress for federal level stuff. However, on the federal level, like, money is fake. You can have to spend all you fucking want. We have a jillion of bullshit programs you can pull money from to go ahead and fund the issue.
Look up the F-35 fighter jet for anyone who thinks that this shit is impossible on a federal level. Would it be impossible to spend that much money on something nobody needs or wants? Yeah.
And to the libertarians who listen to this show for some ungodly reason, even though we hate them all, hey, it's fiat money, so relax. It doesn't matter.
Go nuts.
So sorry, that's my stance on state by state, a single payer.
Ultimately, it's not going to work.
The way that healthcare is needed works in opposition to the way that states can afford to fund things.
So it's got to be all or nothing, basically. Yep. All 50 states.
That's why it's so funny watching the people who are still, for some insane reason, obsessed with relitigating the 2016 primary and defending Hillary Clinton for condemning single payer. The single payer effort in Vermont fails or whatever, they're like, see, you can't do it.
Yep.
That's great politics,
motherfuckers.
By the way.
That's great politics.
Motherfuckers. You got to do it at a national level.
Exactly. Only it's the only like agent that can afford to fund a thing like this. Also, Bernie would have won.
That's good, but that is great politics, though, to tell people that nothing is ever possible, to run on. Well, what if we make it so that Ubers to the doctor's office are deductible, and yeah. just running on that forever?
I know we're wrapping up here, but that's exactly right, Felix. These people who come out and say a single payer wouldn't have worked are the exact same folks who sold out the AC while it was being formed. Mm-hmm. It's the Clintons.
Yep.
It's Larry Summers. It's the Emanuel brothers. It's Neera Tanden. It's all these fucking cowards who sought incremental progress instead of the fucking full Monty. And now their program has collapsed. We must grind up their bones and use them to build the large single national single payer structure and let their ghosts roam its hallways for all eternity.
Tom Perez, we need you.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Faust Care.
Woo!
Everybody.
Thanks, y'all.
It's the original deal with the devil.
In the United States Senate, Sanders has a single-payer bill out with three co-sponsors this time. Last time around, it was one.
Yeah. That's literally three times the amount of co-sponsors. If he keeps...
That's a 300% increase in co-sponsors.
That means that if he does this again... 99 co-sponsors.
Yeah, 90 co-sponsors.
Whatever. I don't care. 9 co-sponsors, but then it's 27 co-sponsors. Then, boys, he's got a majority. 3 times 27, 60, plus 21, that's 81. 81 co-sponsors. By law, the co-sponsors have to vote for it. That beats a filibuster. 81 votes for a single payer in 5 years when Bernie reintroduces the bill.
Because in Trump's second term.
In Trump's second term.
Veto-proof majority.
We're going to make sure that he gets. Just like we made sure that he got the first one. Guys, we're going to do it.
Well, like I said, it's all there. It's on the shelf. But this country is so fucked up, it probably won't happen. But that's not to say, don't despair, because, you know, we're on your side. Tim Faust is on your side. Tim, thanks so much again for joining us and breaking down all this complicated shit. My brain hurts listening to this.
Thank you. I hope it was helpful. I'm happy to...
Can you look at this, by the way? Guys, till next time.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.